There we go. Welcome everybody back to the Angry Nation podcast. And I'm solo tonight. This is just me. We're doing a pre-recorded. So if you're watching this, guys, it was recorded earlier this time. Because I'm out and about. So, and the guys are all tied up and busy. So we've got some travel coming up and we need to pre-record some. So tonight we've got from the show we're going to be at in Kentucky. In March, we've got Jason and I'm sorry, Shelly. I'm thinking of something else at the moment. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm gonna stop thinking about that. Got Jason and Shelly here tonight, guys. How you all doing with Kentucky good. Sustainable living? How you guys
doing? We're doing great.
Yeah,
getting close to festival time, and it's kind of
stressful. I figured you guys are
we're
busy.
Getting there. Yeah,
you guys are busier in hell right now, is where you're at because. It is getting close to showtime. How's how are pre-sales like for tickets and things looking?
They're doing really good.
Doing good. Bowling Green is a last minute city though, so everybody waits to the last minute on a lot of stuff. So yeah. I guess they're playing the odds and seeing all what's going on. But the ticket sales are good. I'm happy with them for now.
Yeah, and you've got a pile of vendors coming, right?
Yeah, we've got close to 60. 60 vendors as of right now.
Yep.
Nice.
And everything.
I mean, there's everything. We've got from preparedness to homesteading, people, stuff that they make on their place and everything, bringing that. And then, gosh, Jason has a tractor company coming in and some people that make tiny, I'm not sure if they're tiny homes or if they're like tiny studio kind of things because they don't really have bathrooms in them. So I'm not sure about that, but they're like little sheds. So
yeah, they're a little pre-built, almost kind of like a Lincoln log set kind of deal. They're pre-built small little one room and two room kind of tiny homes. They're going to be there. We got several custom knife makers. We've got medical gear that's going to be there. Tactical stuff. Chris from Squat Survival Gear is probably going to be up there also. Cool. Selling all his American made backpacks.
Yeah, nice. But we always like hearing American made companies.
We've got a couple forges that are coming, like iron. Like, am I even saying that right? Yes, that thing.
Blacksmithing. Yeah, that thing. Now, is this the first event for you guys for this for SRF? I mean, not SRF. I'm sorry.
KSL.
Kentucky Sustainable KSL. Yes, I get my acronyms messed up. So this is the second one. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Our first one was in October.
And this how'd you guys do on that one? Because you know the festival thing is it can be tough. You know, they either go off really well or you usually lose your rear end on them. So how'd your first one go?
It went good. One of our guys that we're friends with has done festivals for years. And he told us, he said, on your first festival, if you break even and you get 200 people, you're a success.
Yep.
So we checked both those boxes on it. We ended up, I was happy with it. We ended up, attendance was like 420 some people for our very first festival. And we broke even. That is
a success. Because Mountain Readiness, we did the same thing. We broke even and we were like happy. We're like, yes. Because, you know, you had to buy all the tents. You had to buy all the stuff that first time. So your out of pocket is huge on the first show compared to the second one. So,
yeah. And the cool thing about our event is we've got it. The local college has a farm and they've got an expo center where they do rodeos, team roping, all that kind of stuff, cattle shows. Yep. So we rent their facility. Everything is 100% inside. So we don't weather. It's climate controlled indoor area. The only thing that'll be outside, one of the guys is bringing his solar trailer. So he needs sunlight for his trailer to work. And then John Deere will have some of their bigger equipment outside that you can look at.
Well, that's cool.
So everything else will be inside.
What got you guys into deciding that you needed something like this up there, you know? What was the impetus to start Kentucky Sustainable Living? I mean,
well, that's Jason's story, actually starting Kentucky Sustainable Living. So you take that one.
There were several of us scattered across the state that were in another group. That group kind of dissolved, and we're like, we need to start kind of our own thing. So we essentially started Kentucky Sustainable Living as a statewide community, kind of a mag, and it just kept growing and growing and growing. So we've got members all the way from Paducah to Pikeville to the Kentucky border all the way up to Cincinnati. And then people started finding out about it more. So now we've got members in Indiana, West Virginia, Tennessee, Ohio, and it's a community based really in Kentucky. And we do all kinds of stuff. Shelly and I will be processing a pig. So we call some of the members and like, hey, we're going to process a pig. Do y'all want to come learn how to do this? We'll do, we've done a lot of food forest classes on a permaculture food forest on plant nose, just all kinds of stuff. And it evolved. It kind of evolved. We were setting, we did a live with Billy Bond. And after the live, we can blame everything on Billy because he told Shelly, Billy's the blame for everything. He said, he told us, y'all need to do a festival. And I was like, Billy, have you been drinking or what? I was like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. So then Shelly picked it up when we were sitting at SRF.
Yeah, we were sitting out. We were hanging out with Grumpy Acres out at SRF, and Tag was there and some other people, Nicole and Tactical from her group or whatever, so they were there. And we were just sitting around talking about it. And I don't know. It was like, I think that Jason and I were trying to convince each other that we should do it and then trying to talk each other out of it, that kind of thing. Yeah. And Tag looked at us and he goes, if you do it, he said, I'll come and speak at your festival. And, nice. And then more people started, popping up and saying that, and this is just all because of friendships that we've made by attending these festivals and, kind of having this community of people, even though we're across the country, it's like, we've got friends everywhere kind of thing. So, so we did, we're like, okay. And Jason found the venue and we looked at a couple other places, but Lindsay, that's at Western Kentucky University, she is amazing to work with. And, it just, everything fell into place. All the pieces fell into place and it just made it easy to do it. So yes, it's very stressful. Yes. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of moving parts. Yeah. There's a lot of emails. There's a lot of social media stuff. There's all of that stuff, but when it's all done, it's a lot of fun, and it's just kind of like having a homecoming with your buddies that you don't get to see all the time, and we just love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And essentially right after, about a week after we left SRF, it was full mode planning, like we're really going to do this thing. And it just came to fruition that we're going to do this thing and see if we can pull it off. And that's how it was born.
Well, I will say awesome. This, I mean, though.
Go ahead. No. That's awesome. Just hearing the story. That's cool.
Which Mountain Readiness does a fall festival too, and a spring festival, right? I don't know how it is for y'all, but, planning the festival from the spring to the fall, there was a lot to it, but it's even worse going from the fall to the spring because you've got holidays in there and nobody wants to do anything. Nobody wants to talk about anything. Nobody wants to discuss festival stuff. And it's almost like you lose a month and a half because of that period.
They all say the same thing. Contact me after the first of the year. Contact me after the first of the year. That's what you get out of everybody.
I was counting down the days till January 2nd. I was like, January 2nd, I'm going to bug the snot out of these people.
Yeah. There you go.
And honestly, no kidding. Shelly does most of the technical and emails and all that stuff. And I wind up filling the role of getting the sponsors and a lot of the vendors and stuff like that. And it's almost a full-time job. I mean, we talk every day about it, sometimes twice a day. And it's just, it's crazy the stuff that you got to do to put on a festival. And then the thing is, people are like, I can't believe you pulled this off. And I'm like, I just want to take a week after the festival and relax.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You need to decompress now, take a breath. And then too, the last day is you got to pack everything out and get it all cleaned up too. And so people don't realize how much effort goes into doing something like this. I've been running these things like you guys probably for years. I've been doing them for many years. And you kind of take it for granted when all you got to do is walk in the front door and back out the front door. But when you start putting one on, you see all that behind the scenes stuff that was magic to you before, because you just showed up and it was there.
Yeah, I spent pretty much Monday after the festival, all day Monday, there picking up stuff and making sure everything was good and people were loading stuff out and everything. So it was essentially Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, almost five days of being there full time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's well worth it in the end. The biggest thing, the charity dinner that we do on Saturday night for Vets for mm-hmm. Child Rescue, that makes it all worth it. We raised, it was like $10,800 and change for Vets for Child nice. Rescue, that charity dinner.
Yeah, so, we did at the Fallout one we had in October, we did a fundraiser for Bears, Caleb House.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
And so, we're doing another charity one in May if we can get enough people to donate to it. We've got Fortress Canine is bringing some canines out. And if we can get $5,000 up for Caleb House, then I'm going to get in the bite suit and let him put the dogs on me, because I'm rather well known for me and my relationship with dogs, which is questionable with everyone I meet. So you'll never know until I get around them what they're going to do. I get bit a lot, so people get a kick out of it. And the idea of me being chased down by two canines and them taking me to the ground, everybody's excited about that. I'm like, well, all right, $5,000 is what it's going to cost. Donate the money and I'll get in the suit, and we'll give it to Bear.
You're braver than me, because I've seen those Fortress dogs go after people and they're kind of scary.
I know. Well, I'll be in a bite suit and I might even wear a helmet. So you can't get to my face just in case. But it's fun to the events in particular are good, because everybody asks, like, how do I meet people? How do I build my tribe? Go to festivals like this, go to events like this, because everybody there thinks the same way you do. Now, their politics might be a little different, but if you can leave that out of the equation, you're going to meet some awesome people there, because they come from both sides of the fence at these events. Yeah, people don't realize that.
And that's what we try to preach to people. It's like, come and invest a little bit of time, invest the weekend. You're going to meet tons of people, no matter, some of our members from Northern Kentucky, almost to Cincinnati, they met people that were 5 and 10 miles away from them that they probably would have never met if these people wouldn't have come.
Yep.
And it is amazing who you can meet. I mean, I met a couple people that, live 15 minutes down the road.
Yeah.
That I probably
we try to tell people all the time, go take training classes, and I don't really care what you taking a class in, medical, permaculture, gardening, animal husbandry, firearms, tactical, ham radio, but take classes and get trained and, get some knowledge, because you can lose equipment, can be destroyed, but knowledge, as long as you maintain it, is going to be there when you need it. But it's also, again, a great way to meet people that think like you do, that are looking to do the same things you are. And that's how you can start making these connections, to create a group. And to have people to rely on, but you got to spend time with them. That's the other side of that coin, is you definitely got to spend time with them, got to get to know them.
Oh yeah. And the people I've met at these festivals, we've become, it's like a fast track for a friend, because you already know, you kind of think the same way. So there's not that feeling each other out and saying something weird, like, yeah, I prepared for this, and somebody look at you weird. So I've got friends for life. I would like to think so, that I've met at these festivals, and I can call one of the guys when the cell phones were out. He got a text through and was like, hey, if something really goes down, what radio frequencies are you on? I just want to make sure.
Yep.
So that's somebody that I met at the festival.
Yeah. So. And that's awesome. Having that, that PACE plan, that primary, alternate, contingency, emergency for stuff like this. And for us, like, we were coming to a little get together over here at a buddy's house when the phones weren't working, but my wife's didn't work, but mine did. And I wasn't worried about it. I knew where I was going, and I've got enough radios with me that I wouldn't worry about anything else. I'm like, all we gotta do is get there. It's less than an hour drive to his house from our house. I said, I'm not worried about that. If the phones don't work, I don't care. But, having a plan, like you said, what frequencies are we going to be talking on, and it depends. Are the repeaters working? if the repeaters aren't working, well, now we're HF or we're simplex, you know. So, again, having that knowledge ahead of time of how to use this equipment, because so many people want to go out and buy ham radios like the Baofeng and throw that box in a closet, and they figure on game day they're going to take that thing out and use it. and you're not going to just take that thing out of the box and use it. You're going to be very frustrated. So that's another thing is practice the skills, you know. Don't just go learn how to do it. Practice it. You know, we do a Monday night radio net on DMR, which allows people from all over the world to get involved. And you're sitting in your living room because, you know, you're using the internet and a ham radio. So we've got guys from Australia, from all over the country, get on there and talk, and sitting in your living room, you know. It's amazing what the technology can do for you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it gets people over the mic fright, you know. So do either of you have your ham license, ham radio license?
I've got my general. Shelly's getting ready to get hers.
Good. Good deal.
Yeah.
Yep. I've got my general as well. I was thinking about sitting to take the extra in May, but it ain't looking like that's going to happen because I ain't started to study for it yet. And so I don't think I'll be taking it.
We've got on Friday before the festival, we have a ham radio workshop, and you can test for your ham radio. It's mainly set up for a technician license, but you can take your general if you want to. I think we'll be able to take your extra too. So I'm going to try for my extra on Friday, but that you can sign up on the website for that workshop too. But it's pretty neat. They're sending out all the study material ahead of time, so you can study for your tech license. They're going to do two Zoom meetings before, and then they're going to do a ham cram that morning, take the test, and then the other half of the day, they're going to actually show you how to use your radios, and you're getting a Baofeng. I think it's a UV-17 in the class that's yours to take home.
Oh, really? Who's doing the ham class?
It's S&B Homestead Radio.
S&B Homestead Radio. All right. Because we're doing the same thing at Mountain Readiness. We got Nick Meacher is coming in, and he's giving the test there. We're not doing no cram sessions or nothing, but you can take your test for free. You're not even being charged to take it there. So it's just something he does because he's pretty passionate about getting people involved in radio.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll walk out of there with my extra. I haven't started studying either, so.
Man, I hear it's the worst one. I hear it's rough. So it's only memorization.
When I took my general, I went ahead and tried for my extra, and I missed it by like 3 questions. I was so mad. So
is that Shelly's the one that's all theory and stuff or what? Whatever.
Yeah, that one's, there's a lot of theory and math and other crap involved in this one.
It's pretty hard.
So we'll see. Yeah, I mean, I would probably never need it. But it's like, if I could get it, why not get it? Plus, I think I got to renew next year. So if I took the test and passed and it takes care of my renewal, I don't have to do that. So maybe I'll just go ahead and do it.
Shelly's going to try to get her general too while she's there.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Start using them HF radios. I'm going to pull mine out tomorrow because, like I said, we're at my buddy's house, but I got a HF rig with me and a portable antenna. So I'm going to put that up tomorrow and see if I can make contact with anybody from out here. Been a while since I've been on HF, so I was like, I need to start doing this again.
It's been a while since I played on HF. We had a windstorm and it took my Invis antenna out, so I've got to restring that up sometime.
Yeah, I got a tower at my house with a dipole on it and a VHF antenna, but I've got a M-Pass antenna. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They make one that breaks down into a pack, but it'll go up in like 6 or 8 different configurations.
Yeah.
So you bunch of options for a HF antenna. And
I've got several Chameleon is what I've got.
That's Chameleon is. Yeah. They make the M-Pass. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the same one, Chameleon. So
Shelly's just nodding her head. She has no idea what we're talking about.
She's like, you guys are talking Greek to me.
It's an antenna. It goes up in the air. It allows you to talk on stuff. I got you. All good.
So you said you're on what book, Shelly?
I am on book 7. Is that book Avenging 7. Home? I think
that's
it is.
Avenging Home. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I was I was upset at the end of book 6 because That's when the bomb, well, I probably shouldn't give something away, but something bad happened at the end of book six. And I was like, oh my God. And then that thing came on because I'm listening to it on Audible. And the guy came on, he's like, thank you for using Audible. And I'm like, what the hell? And I'm looking at my phone and I was about to die. So I had to go get book seven because I had to find out what happened.
Well, that's become the theme, and is the end of them are always going to be some wicked, miserable cliffhanger thing that you're going to want more information for right now, but it ain't going to be there. Like book 12, everybody's like, dude, I read the last page, and I was like, what the fuck? You know, what are you doing to me? You know, I've been getting that a lot, and I was like, well, I said, if you guys haven't figured it out by now that this is going to keep happening, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, I'm like, if you didn't like the end of that one, you're really not going to like the end of the next one. I'll tell you that much. So.
And that when we were interviewing S&B Homestead Radio last night, and he said, Brian said that his wife got him book 12 for Christmas, and he was like, he said, you're gonna die. Okay, thanks for the heads up. He's like, it's good, it's really good.
I'm glad everybody likes him. It the whole thing, you know, getting into it was never intentional. I never thought of myself as a writer, never dreamt of it. I wrote the first book on an internet forum for my own entertainment. You know, it's just something I was doing to kill time. And it just took on a life of its own, had over 2 million views online and people begging me to publish it. And I was like, I'm not going to publish this. I'm no writer. Nobody's going to pay money for this garbage. I'm like, here, I'll write you another one. So I wrote the second book on the same forum, the whole thing, read it as I posted it, you know? And, but then somebody posted my PayPal account and they're like, let's send him money. We'll make him do it. And people donated like $4,000 to me. So I'm like, all right. I'm like, look, I'll get this made into a book if you guys will just shut up and leave me alone. Still not taking it serious. And, but, you know, finally I paid way more than that to get it made into a terrible first edition. It's just terrible. But it hit Amazon and it made a quarter of my annual salary the first month it was on Amazon. So I was like, all right, there is something to this. And then I started to take it serious. And then like 6 weeks after it was published, I think it was Penguin Books called and made an offer on it. And I turned them down. And 2 weeks later, they called back and made another offer that I couldn't turn down. And so then we were kind of off to the races for real. You know, it was all, awesome. You know, like getting struck by lightning kind of thing. Just right place, right time. Everything was exactly perfect. So I just got lucky.
That's pretty cool.
But it's panned out pretty good, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, I was able to quit my day job, and this is what I do now. So I write books, and I take classes. Every now and then we give classes, do a little consulting work, but mainly write books and hang out with folks like we're doing this weekend. So that's the best part.
That's cool.
One of the things that I like about the books that I think, you know, adds to the authenticity of it is the way that you portray people just out in the world. And, you know, just the whole, you know, it's not like you got the bad guys and the good guys and all of that, but by and large, people are just expecting someone to show up and fix their stuff for them. And that's, you know, we all know that that's not going to happen. And, you know, that's kind of one of the reasons that Jason and I, well, I mean, it is one of the reasons that Jason and I are into doing this festival and doing KSL and having classes and teaching people, you know, that thing that happened 4 years ago kind of was a big wake up call to people, I think. And it's nobody's going to fix your stuff. No. Nobody's going to provide for you. You know, I mean, you've got those guys camped out at the end of their road in their neighborhood, and there's people walking by with their kids and they're emaciated and sick and, you know, killing people for a can of corn and all of that crazy stuff. And I don't think that people understand that nobody's coming to save you.
No. You know, you're trained this way. It's always, especially in the U.S., you call somebody, right? If you're arguing with your wife, you call the police. You let them sort it out. If you're having a problem, you call somebody. It's always call somebody. You got to call a guy to come fix your problems. And so that's ingrained into people. And, you know, they don't want self-reliant people. They don't want independent-minded people that can think and take care of their own problems. They need people that are reliant on the system. Otherwise, who needs the system, you know?
Right.
So they perpetuate that, and that's what it's meant to do. And that's why in the story, I demonstrate kind of what it's going to look like, you know, in my opinion, but I study civil conflict all over the world. I'm a history student at heart. That's what I mainly look at. And humans are number one, we're just another mammal on this planet, and we happen to be a predator. So, you know, at heart, we're base animals. You know, everybody's like, oh, I believe all people are inherently good. I believe all people are inherently base animals, and their behavior will reflect the inputs to it. So if they're under pressure, they're not going to be behaving well. You know, they get hungry and desperate, they're going to behave even less well. So, you know, we will all curtail our activities or how we present ourselves based on the level of comfort we have at the moment. And so I'm always telling people to get comfortable with being uncomfortable again, because I got a feeling those days are in our very near future, you know, some uncomfortable days. Like, you look at the cell phone little thing that went down today. Well, what if that was the power grid instead? Yeah. You know, what if it was power plants in the states and different states just dropping out, just shutting down, you know, and what that would do. And it wouldn't take many either before you could bring the power grid of this country to its knees just by taking out a few plants. So get comfortable being uncomfortable, you know, and learn some stuff, guys. Can't stress that enough.
And it's not going to be the government sending you out stimulus checks and stuff like that either. It's just not. Yeah.
Government exists for one reason. Government exists to perpetuate and expand government. That's it. It's the only reason it exists. It ain't here to help nobody. You know, they talk about law enforcement and paramedics and fire, they're first responders. Well, they're not. They're second responders. We're the first responders because we're at the place where the bad thing's happening to us. So we can either be a victim or we can be the first responder and respond to that incident and start dealing with it instead of standing around waiting for somebody else to show up. So,
yeah. And Chris, talking about, you know, you've got to call somebody when something happens. You got to call somebody. I grew up, my parents didn't call somebody unless it was something. I remember my dad only calling somebody if it was the HVAC that was messed up on the house. Cause he didn't have the Freon to fix and do that, but something broke at the house. You didn't call anybody. Dad fixed it. There's an electric problem. Dad fixed it. Something going on. That's the way I grew up. And now if there's something going on at my house, I fix it. I mean, hell, I fixed the air conditioner a little while ago. A capacitor went out. I traced it down, figured out what it was, called my HVAC guy. And I was like, I need a capacitor. He's like, okay. So I ran and got it. That's the whole mentality. Everybody, even stupid stuff, with me being a contractor, some of the stuff that people call me to do, I've got people that call me to hang freaking pictures at their house because their husband's a doctor or a lawyer and he's out playing golf and doing this. And he's like, I don't care what it costs as long as I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
So I've spent a whole day hanging pictures for somebody.
I grew up like you did, only we didn't have, dad never had to fix the AC because we didn't have AC when I was growing up. Like, I think I was in junior high school before I ever lived in a house with central air in Florida down here. So, you know, I grew up putting my bed sheets in the freezer right before bedtime, you know, to get them. And then you'd go in there and roll up in that thing and be like, oh, this feels great for 5 minutes. And now you're sweating again. You're stuck to your sheets. But yeah, I can relate. And, you know, they're breeding that out, though. They call it toxic masculinity and all this other crap for what I refer to as a man, you know, an average, what I would call a man. He's got to know how to use tools. He's got to know how to do a few things, you know, not just be upright on the surface of the earth. That don't qualify, in my opinion. And most of these young guys coming up today just aren't learning the stuff on how to be a man.
I've seen that time and time again, trying to hire a guy. I mean, even like a 20-year-old kid that you think could do something, you go to hire him and you give him a hammer and nail, like, drive this nail. And they're like, which end of the hammer do I use? You failed the test. Sorry about that. So
I was working on a power plant one time and they came out with this young kid and said he's going to be my helper. Me and a buddy of mine, he's going to be our helper. And he had come through some work program, had put him there. And so he walks out. We're building a power plant. This is industrial construction. And he's got his cute little red toolbox about that long. You know, it's about that tall, you know, toting it out on the job. And He sets it down. I was like, I said, is that your lunchbox? And he's like, no, there's my tools. And I was like, nah, that's too small to be a toolbox, man. I'm like, what you really got in there? You know? So he opens it up and he's got like the little micro screwdrivers. He's got like a little pair of pliers. He's got like a 12-foot tape measure. And I'm picking this stuff up, looking at it. I'm like, well, you can't use that here. And I'm just throwing it over my shoulder. I'm like, what the hell is that? And I'm like, who bought this shit for you, dude? I'm just throwing his tools, like, shook the box out. I'm like, well, you can put your lunch in that tomorrow. You don't need none of this other crap. Don't even bring it back here, man. And then we went into our toolboxes and we produced enough tools for him to work with. You know, this kid didn't know how to read a tape measure yet. That's where we had to start with it. And
did he say 16 and three of those little lines?
He didn't even know. He just looked at it. Right. He just stood there staring at it. The half, quarter, eighth, 16th, it wasn't even there. He's just looking at it going, what's all them lines mean? And I was like, well, you're about to find out. And I said, go there and cut me a piece of cardboard about that big. And he comes over, he cuts it, and I take a Sharpie and I draw it out and I label everything on it. I poked a hole in it, put a piece of string around it, hung it around his neck. I said, well, now every day you come to work, you have that around your neck so you know what each one of those is. I said, and then you can start wearing it to work. You know, but, you know, people are like, oh, that's mean. No, it's not. That was, you know, proving a point. Plus, by doing it, everybody who looked at him knew he was learning to read his tape. And other guys would be like, they would call out a measurement to him just to make him do it, you know. So part of it's hazing to a degree, but it's also we're letting everybody else know this kid's still learning. He's green, you know. So, I do sort of miss working, but not really.
I've had those kids. I've had those kids before. They'll measure something. And they're like, it's 16 and three of those little marks. And I'm like, holy shit, what is going on?
Yeah, I had a helper that was older than me one time. I was working out at SeaWorld, this back in the 90s. And I'm calling out pipe measurements to him, and everything I get's like a half inch off. And I was like, Ron, I said, do you even know how to read a tape? He's like, well, I know them halves. He's like, my wife's teaching me them quarters. And I went, them halves? I'm like, there's one. There's one half inch mark on the tape measure, dude. I know them halves, and my wife's teaching me the quarters. And I was like, oh, my dear God. Did the same thing with him. He was the first guy I ever did it for. Drew the tape measure thing out, poked it, but I did it on a piece of drywall for him because I didn't care for him too much. I'm like, right around your neck every day. You come to work, you know how to read a tape measure. You got to learn them skills, though, man.
Hey, I had one boy. He was probably in his 50s. He said, I've been pouring concrete all my life. I know how to do it. And so I let him with one of my lead guys, and I'm like, y'all go get this garage floor set up and everything. And I told my guys, like, let him lead on this. I come back, my guy that worked for him pulled me aside. He goes, dude, this is jacked up. So I went and looked, and I was looking around. And, man, you always pitch a garage from the back to the front. So any of the water.
So the water runs out of it, not into it. Yeah.
Dude, he had a 4-inch pitch going into the garage. And I'm like, dude, here's your – I wrote him a check. And I'm like, yeah, I'm good, man. And my boy that worked for me, he's like, man, he jacked this stuff up. And he's like, I just let him do it just to see what would happen. And I'm like –
I wanted to see how bad it could be. How bad could it possibly get? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like a ramp rolling into that garage, and I'm like, wow. Just regrade all of it, and it'll be okay.
Damn. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the sad thing, you know, the kids are learning today, though. I think we're about to see a big change. You know, it was like when we were coming up, it was always like, right, go to college, get your degree so you can get a good job, you can do this. And my high school in particular had like a 98% pass through to college. And I had no desire to go to college. That was more into the trade stuff, but I enlisted in the Marine Corps, and that's why I wasn't worried about college. And then that didn't work out, and so I went into the trades. You know, I was a heavy industrial electrician is what I did for a living, and I made six figures. I didn't have a degree. I didn't have student debt loan. And I think these kids now are seeing that whole you got to go to college thing is more about the student loan industry than it is anything else. It's to get them into debt immediately. Yeah, and a lot of them, then they go in there and get degrees and shit that is useless. There is no way to monetize this degree, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, guys, well, what's his name? Mike Rowe. Mike Rowe with the trades and all, and how he promotes that and encourages it, I think kids are starting to see that. Some of them are, and you're going to see a shift back to the trades a little bit for a certain class of them. You know, there's those that are always going to go to the university because they've got to finish their indoctrination into communism. But for those that are fairly smart, they're looking at it going, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to go learn to weld, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to go learn a practical skill.
I had a boy help me a couple summers, and he got he was still in high school, and he said, I want to do industrial maintenance. It's what I want to do. We've got a great technical college here. He called me right when he was graduating, and he said, there's a big factory. They make Ford truck frames here in Bowling Green. He said they came in and did a thing. They started him off at like 20 something. And this has been 5 or 6 years ago. Started him off at like $25 an hour. He could work as many hours as he wanted to. And they were also paying for his school. And I'm like, wow, dude, you're making like 50 grand a year being an 18 year old kid. And they're paying for your school.
Yep.
So,
yeah. When I got into electrical work, it was kind of the same thing. If you wanted to go to school at night, they'd pay for it. Most of the companies you work for, they put you through the apprenticeship. I kind of did my apprenticeship on my own. I fast tracked myself through it real quick and learned on my own. I knew the NEC, the National Electrical Code, almost could just about quote it to you. And I taught myself motor controls because after I wired the first Walmart, you know, I was just like, all right, well, this is boring as hell. You know, this is the same thing over and over. Lights, receptacles. Like, it's going to bore me to death. This ain't going to cut it. And so I learned about motor controls and process controls and stuff like that. And I taught it to myself. And then I was able to get into industrial work. So I worked for power companies and things like that. I was eventually certified at 30 kV, 30,000 volts, and worked that glove hand, you know. But and it was a good way to make a living, you know. I think people are going to see the value in that kind of thing, as opposed to going to college and wasting your time, because I was never out of work. You know, like you're in contracting. If you've got skills, you always got a job. There's always someone hiring someplace for that, you know?
Yeah. There's always,
so I encourage my kids to do it, but you know, none of them went to college. I'm still waiting to see what kind of trades they're going to get into. Still waiting. One works in a pizza shop, one works for Walgreens, and the other one's unemployed. So I'm waiting to see what they're going to do.
Goodness.
One of these days. So you guys do. So this is going to be the spring show. When is your fall show up there?
It's October 26th and 27th, I think.
Okay. That sounds right.
It's the weekend before Halloween.
Right before, I was going to say, Well, that's kind of how we did ours. You know, we're going to do some trick-or-treating for the kids. Weren't that many kids showed up. We thought there'd be more, but we're going to let them, like, trick-or-treat the all the tents and everything, you know, and around the campground and all. Try to keep it family-friendly.
Ours is a family-friendly event. A lot of these that you go to are not super kid-friendly. I mean, we've got
– yeah.
Emily Rock is coming. She's got she does dairy shares with her Jersey cows. She's bringing one of her Jersey cows. She's going to bring some lambs in where the kids can.
She's actually bringing a whole petting zoo.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. So she'll have a whole petting zoo there for the kids. Blair,
my Homestead, wife will be in there.
Blair Homestead has Highland cattle, and they're going to bring some of their Highland cattle. And they've got a photo.
Those would be cool to see.
So you can
take a picture of the Highland cow. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Old shaggy things.
Yeah, and I mean, there's kids stuff. There were kids running around the expo having fun. I mean, it was a good time for all the kids too.
It's cool to see that when you get these kids, you get them outside and you get them away from there. Ain't no electronics or nothing for them to mess with. Because like at Mountain Readiness, pretty much everybody camps there. It's at a campground, and there's an arena there where they hold a big rodeo every year too. So there's an actual arena. There's a lot of open ground, and then we've got a whole section of the campground is closed off for us. So everybody down in there is for the event, and you know, you're milling around at night. The bonfires are going, and everybody's walking around and talking to each other. But you get these kids outside, and you watch them turn into kids again. They're not this, you know.
Yeah.
They're out there running around and hooting and hollering you know, and they're sleeping. They go to sleep early and they, you know, and they sleep all night because they've been out there, you know, being kids and just wearing themselves out, you know. I remember when I was a kid, I didn't have sleep problems like I do these days. I went to bed and went to sleep, you know. Yep. I was tired as a kid. Life was good back then, and it's just awesome to see it, you know, when they're out there like that. And get them aside and show them stuff and get them interested in things that can draw them away from that. Get them interested in things that will get them outside. Like we've got Sue LaRue will be giving a tracking class, him and another fella at our event. And that's a cool thing for kids, teaching them how to follow tracks, you know. Get them out there, get their minds engaged, and try to keep them outside more than and away from these damn screens because it's they're starting to see deformities. I don't know if you guys have seen the videos of the YouTuber streamers who take their headphones off and then they shave their heads and there's a dent in their head, like, yep. right where the thing for this is. It's actually denting their skulls. There's already
crooked neck.
Well, that's the next thing is there's also a spur starting to grow off of people's necks now because they look down so much. It's starting to change the skeletal structure of people. So it'll be one is going to be their hands. Fingers are going to start changing shape, they say, getting longer. And then two, people are going to start having pot bellies from sitting like this all the time, just hunched over looking. But we're already beginning to see it with the neck and with the skull. Like, there's a bunch of the streamers all shaved their heads, and they all had it. I mean, when they turned profile-wise, you could see it, just a dip right there in the skull, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to be looking this up when we get out there.
Yeah, it's real. That's, yeah, I'm telling you, it's real.
Yeah, yep. I mean, I try to get my 8-year-old. I mean, as soon as he got in from school, he came down to the shop and was like, hey, can I ride my four-wheeler? I was like, yep. So we got him out mm-hmm. on his four-wheeler. He rode his four-wheeler for about an hour, and he's like, I'm cold now, wet. He's like, I'm ready for a hot shower. So,
oh, my God, this is for real a thing.
Yes, it is. I wasn't BSing you.
There's some dude shaving his head, and there's a dent. There's a dent. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Looks like someone brained him with a pipe. I mean, that's just what it looks like. Yes. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yep.
That is messed up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Just from the way that from staring at screens and wearing headphones and, you know, all this stuff, it's humans, we weren't made to do the things that we're making ourselves do now, you know?
Right.
And so it's starting to manifest. So it's gonna be interesting moving forward to see how that goes. Some of these guys are jacked up. I mean, they look like they've been hit right onto the top of the dome with a pipe and just yeah. I wonder if they stopped wearing headphones, if it would come back, you know, or if it would go back the way it was, or if it stays that way.
I don't know, but some of the money these guys were making, I might take a hand for a little while.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, think about it. Why are they making money? Like why? Because they have X number of people looking at them. That's the sole reason they're making money. That's it.
That's messed up. Yeah.
And some of them are just doing nonsense, you know. Like, I see some of these TikTokers and the stuff they talk about. I'm like, well, that's factually wrong, and you're misrepresenting that. That's not true. But people watch this stuff and take it for fat because, like we were talking about earlier, the arbiters of truth, you know, we now have the ministry of truth and those who will decide what is misinformation and what is disinformation and what is fact. And fact changes daily because they're changing definition of words all the time. Like, woman and things like that. They're changing the definitions and they're going back and changing them in the dictionaries too to reflect that. So you have no way to go verify anything anymore. Because if you Google something, you're just getting what Google wants you to see for that result, not the answer to the question, what they want you to see. And so if we now have no way of verifying what's real and what's not, where does that leave us? You know, that's a little bit of a scary spot to be in.
We need those 1970s Encyclopedia Britannicas sitting on the shelves.
Books are hard to change. I mean, you can ebooks obviously, but once it's been printed, it's there. But I bet you it's gonna be hard to find any sets of encyclopedias if you looked around. I bet you it would be hard to find one for sale anywhere.
Yeah.
Because no one has had them in years, so.
Oh, yeah. I remember at my aunt's house looking through them all the time. If you wanted to know something, that's what you went and grabbed and looked at it.
Oh, hey, we had a set because that's how you did book reports and reports and other stuff. You looked it up in the encyclopedia.
Well,
you know, the analog internet. That's what it was.
Right.
That was the analog internet. And, you know, and we now have generations of people in this country that do not know what life was like pre-cell phone, pre-smartphone even, like pre-what we have now. They don't remember the days of the brick, you know? They don't remember, they don't know what life was like before the internet existed, before computers existed, and before cell phones.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I very clearly remember because summer times and we weren't in school, so we were outside. We didn't hang out in the house. You weren't allowed to hang out in the house. Number one, get the hell out of here. You know, you were told to go outside, but me and my buddies would jump on our bikes and take off and be gone all day. And no one knew where the hell we were. We might give a rough idea. We're going that direction. And that was it. But the rules were you were back when the streetlights turned on. You remember the old day, you know, when the streetlights came on, you better have your ass. All right, I'll be here. And that was it. Or if you heard dad whistle for you, you know, and nobody ever knew whose dad it was. So everybody ran and to find out who was in trouble. The good old days.
Oh, yeah. Growing up, I mean, once I got old enough, I had a four wheeler Friday afternoon. I came home, got off the bus. Left a note for my parents, and it's kind of like, hey, I'm going to Jeremy's house, and I took the four-wheeler, and I would come back home Sunday night, but they knew exactly where I was at.
Yeah, and they weren't worried about you. Like, now you can't, your kid can't ride a bike without a helmet. They can't ride in the back of the truck no more. I mean, hell, I remember my dad doing donuts in a field with me standing on the bumper holding onto the tailgate. Like, when I was about 8 years old, too. He's out there trying to sling me off, and he succeeded very well. But yeah, these days they'd lock him up for something like that. It's sad to see how the country's changing. You know, they think they can legislate safety and security, and you cannot legislate safety and security. I don't care how hard you try, it just doesn't work, and it shouldn't. The government shouldn't be able to tell me I can't ride in the bed of a pickup truck.
Yeah,
you know, they shouldn't be able to do that.
Well, I'm, you know, when McDonald's puts on a coffee cup that the contents are hot, that's, I mean, it just all goes to shit, you know?
Well, more so when they let somebody sue for being burned over hot coffee.
Yeah.
That's when we know we're screwed because now we're in, you know, retardville. Everybody knows the coffee's hot. Everybody knows, in particular, McDonald's coffee is scalding ass hot. Everyone's always known that. I've known that. I mean, I was a little kid. My dad drank coffee. It didn't matter if it was 900 degrees or 9 degrees. He drank coffee all day, every day. So I was well versed. And you know, McDonald's coffee was always hotter than hell because he'd get it and be like, hold that. And I'd be like, I can't, you know, take this back. But no, now we'll let somebody sue the manufacturer over it.
Yeah.
The company that brewed the coffee. It's just, you know, not helping us none. We're watching the decline of society in slow motion.
Oh, for sure.
Very much so.
So you guys, you have a website where folks can get tickets and stuff, right?
Yes.
So sign up right it's now. KentuckySustainableLiving.com. You can go there. We have all of our speakers and demonstrators on there, our sponsors, and you can go there and get your tickets. Tickets are $35, but if you use coupon code email25, you can get $10 off and get them for $25. That's pretty much where you're going to find all of the information. We update the website and just kind of keep everything condensed right there. There you go.
Cool.
That's it.
There it is right there for you guys.
We'll hit that up. You can get the tickets for the events. You can register and pay for the workshops, the two workshops we got before, because we got the ham radio workshop, and then Chuck Peoples with Homestead Medical is doing a Homestead Medical workshop before on Friday also. It's going to deal with.
I am so sorry.
What was that?
Hell was that?
That was some idiot in a car. I don't know. It just went by. We had the front door open.
I was like, what happened? Damn airplane just fly into your house? Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. I thought that somebody pushed funny. The sound effect button or something.
Yeah, right. I was like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to being up there with you guys for sure. So, I mean, we're definitely looking forward to being there.
We're super excited about you coming. And now that I'm a big fan, I'm really excited about you coming.
Well, I have my wife Melody with me, and then I got my buddy Russ and Teresa. They come out and help with the booth and doing merch and all that good stuff. So we'll have our booth set up, and they'll be hanging around and helping. That lets frees me up to get out and move a little bit, so I ain't got to sit right there at the booth the whole time. So they're always a big help for us. And yeah, they bought a camper, and anytime we do one now, they run around with us and go do them with us. So it's a lot of fun.
That's cool. And hey, you can also get tickets for the charity dinner too on the website. So,
okay.
And with the tickets for the charity dinner, you're going to get to eat. We're going to have prime rib dinner. And that money goes to Vets for Child Rescue. So you can sit there and have dinner with all the speakers and demonstrators and sit and have a good night and talking to everybody. We're going to have quite a bit of good bourbon that I've got. And then we're going to have wine also.
Nice. So, good. My favorite. Yeah. Bourbon, that's my thing. That's I'm a whiskey drinker. That's what I do. So
we've got a local distillery that's giving us some bourbon. So
nice.
They're about 30 miles down the road.
Well, we'll definitely give it a shot. So let me put them dates back up again. I want everybody to see it one more time. I want to make sure they know where to go.
There's also RV camping on site.
Is there?
Yeah. So you can, it's on the website. You can go on there and reserve for Friday and Saturday. Yeah, you can do that too.
All right. Well, I'm going to do that. We're going to change that because I think we were going to do a KOA, but if we can do on site, we're going to switch.
With the RV spots, they don't have a sewer hookup. Electric and water, but there are showers on site that you can use there.
Well, and as long as I got water, I mean, we got my camper, my has a like a 45 gallon holder tank in it, so it's you can shower and do everything inside of the camper, it's fine. So that's it, guys. Kentucky Sustainable Living is March 23rd and 24th in Bowling Green, Kentucky. We'll be up there, and hopefully we'll see a bunch of y'all there too. I know these guys would like that. And come hang out, you know, just if you're in the area, come hang out. It's going to be a good time. What are the tickets at the door if they don't buy online? How much are the tickets?
At the door, they're $35.
There you go. So 35 bucks.
Get them in advance. Use coupon code email 25 to get $10 off if you get them in advance.
There you go. So get out there and get them now. Say 10 bucks or 20 bucks or 40 bucks, depending on how many people you got to take. And we'll see you guys in Bowling Green next month. Getting there quick now, isn't it? We're like,
yes, it is.
Month away. As a matter of fact, a month away from right now.
Yep.
We're getting there fast. Well, guys, I appreciate having you on. We're looking forward to being there. We'll shoot some video and we'll do some little interviews and stuff over there too.
I'm coming
with all the camera equipment and all that good stuff. And my wife will be shooting some video and we'll be talking to some folks and things like that.
Awesome.
So, looking forward to it. And you got anything you want to leave them with? Anywhere else you want to point them at other than your website, which we had up there just a little bit ago? I'm going to put that up one more time for them. There we go. That's where you guys go to get tickets, sign up, and also get the tickets for the charity dinner. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys. Well,
If you go check out Kentucky Sustainable Living on YouTube, we put videos out every week where we're interviewing speakers and stuff. So you can come and, you know, get an idea of who you're going to be seeing there. So check that out on YouTube as well.
Yeah. Every Thursday at 6 o'clock, we're doing interviews with the speaker.
Cool. All right. So yeah, check out the YouTube channel too then. That's what I was wanting to make sure. If you had anything you wanted them to point them at, we made sure we got it out to them. So. Like I said, guys, this one was pre-recorded. I don't know when it's going to run exactly, but it'll be out probably in the next couple weeks. It'll be before the event for sure. Because I have to go to Oklahoma and help my wife's mom move to New Orleans next week. I hate my life. Anyway, you guys know the drill. Be good or be good at it. We will catch you next time.